Welcome to Line of Work, a show about people who actually like their jobs. I'm your host, Sarah Olson, and each week I interview a notable professional from a different industry. Together, we deep dive into their professional journey, the decisions behind it, and what keeps them excited to go to work every single day. Look, the world and the job market has turned upside down this year, and if you're like me, you might be feeling a little lost. If so, listen on. Line of Work is here to explore just how many paths there are to finding fulfillment in what you do for a living. Today, I had a conversation with Randall Otis. Randall is a longtime comedian who currently writes full-time for The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. We talked about lots of stuff, including how he got into comedy, how you can stay motivated in non-traditional careers, and how The Daily Show gets made. So if you're a fan, make sure to listen for that. Here we go. Hi, Randall. Thank you so much for joining us on the finale of season one of Line of Work. Could you just take a second to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about what you do for a living as of right now?
For sure. Oh, man, I didn't know it was this finale. I feel honored.
Short finale, six episodes.
Yeah, I'm a comedian, writer, actor type guy. And right now I work as a writer for The Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
Very cool. So I know that you went to Williams College for undergrad, and I'd love to hear sort of what your career goals were coming out of college and how your time at Williams shaped those goals.
Definitely. Coming out of college, I didn't really have a solid sense of what I wanted to do. That's kind of like why I went to Williams in the first place. You know, liberal arts college, you can just kind of delay making that decision compared to like some place with engineering or along those lines.
Right.
But in college, I was pretty focused on the arts. Like I was in a number of dance troupes while I was there, took a lot of art-based courses. And yeah, when I came out, I was actually originally planning on pursuing dance a little further. I'd done some workshops. I mean, worked with some artists while I was in college.
Nice.
But then, because of, honestly, like I had a medical thing that kind of made it so I couldn't dance on like a professional level anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's totally fine. Blessing in disguise. Plus, like, I can still dance normally. But yeah. Because of that, then when I graduated, I was an intern at this advertising company called Gray, where I was like in account management, which is just not exactly what I wanted to do. I thought it was boring. It wasn't creative at all. And I had always been interested in comedy. And so while I was interning at this company, I would go to open mics at night. I mean, try to kind of like just get my feet wet in the comedy scene. So I would like go to, first, I'd go like once a week, then twice a week, then eventually it was like every single day.
Wow.
That I would be doing open mic comedy, which is the lowest form of art. But, you know, I liked it. And then eventually I decided, I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a real shot.
Yeah.
And so comedy's great and stand-up's great just because like you're literally out every single night. So it's like the ultimate way to network with people. And so as you get better and people want to work with you, you hear more about job opportunities. And so I would start like being a PA for certain sets, certain companies like that. Just doing a lot of like odd jobs for people in the creative field. And while I was doing these odd jobs, I was working at Postmates.
Amazing. Love it.
Just, you know, to have a job. But then what I did is I reached out to my alumni network at Williams because I was like, I just want to see if I can get a bit further than these PA jobs. And through that, I managed to get an internship at this place called Jigsaw Productions, which is a documentary company, which isn't exactly like the entertainment I was interested in. But I'm like, it's better to get a foot in the door in some capacity.
Yeah.
And so I worked there. And then eventually they had an opening for a writer or slash researcher for one of the documentaries. And so I got that position and I was working there for like a year being a researcher for this documentary company. And then just randomly, I got a message on LinkedIn from The Daily Show saying they're looking for a researcher.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I thought it was fake originally, so I didn't like answer it. But then they texted me. They're like, no, 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 for real, for real.
This is Trevor Noah. I really want you to come work for me.
Yeah. So I got the job to be a researcher at The Daily Show off LinkedIn.
Wow.
And then while I was working at the Daily Show as a researcher, I had this video go viral. And so I had from that video, like an opportunity and from other TV shows are reaching out to see if I wanted to work for them.
Oh my goodness.
And then I kind of used that as leverage to submit to the Daily Show as a writer. And then I, you know, passed the test. That's not what you call it. they were pleased with my packet, my writing packet.
Nice.
And so that's how I am where I am today. That's my attempt at being succinct.
Definitely, you touched on a lot of stuff that I want to hear more about. So zooming back to the beginning, I noticed that you said you held a couple of internships. With those internships, like what role do you feel like they played in your career ultimately or as of now? Did you feel like they were worthwhile? I feel like internships can kind of be a double-edged sword, especially in the arts. So I'd love to hear sort of your thoughts on those.
Yeah, it's a little hard. Like some were more useful than others. Like there were some jobs I would do where I was, I don't know, just making sure people didn't get into a shot. And I was like stopping people on the street, like, oh, don't go this way. We're shooting something. And for those jobs, you know, no one really noticed me there. I wasn't contributing like a huge amount to the project. So it's hard to like have your value be known, especially when you want to work higher up in the field.
Right.
But the internship at the documentary company, you know, pretty much directly led to a job that put me on the track to where I am now. So it's one of those things where it's like, it's very hard to say. It's not the best answer, but it's like some were worth it, some weren't, which isn't
right.
Super helpful.
No, but I mean, that is helpful. And you never really know, right? And it sounds like you just took a couple of risks and some didn't pay off and some did pay off.
Yeah, that's kind of it. It's like you don't really know which ones are going to be the ones that are useful.
But also in general, it sounds like one of them really did pay off. And so they can be worth it if they seem interesting enough to you and you have the time and the means to take them.
Yeah, for sure.
That's good. And I've had plenty of internships myself, so I hear you there. I want to also talk about your start in comedy and that decision to start doing stand-up. I think for non-artistic folks and artistic folks, honestly, the idea of getting up in front of people and telling personal stories and hoping people laugh is like one of the most heinous and terrifying experiences you could envision. So I'd love to hear like what initially prompted you to do that. And also if you have like advice for people who might be interested in that kind of thing, how do you go about writing your first tight 10-minute set or even 2 minutes of material? Like how do you even get started with stuff like that?
I started from a number of reasons. Like one is like people have said I'm funny like for a while. So I had that like confidence from that. And then also I'm like a big fan of comedy as well. So like I would listen to a lot of podcasts from comedians and hear like how they got to where they were. Like podcasts are great in that way, just because I'm like, you have so much access to these types of people. Like a lot of comedians, when they start, they have just stories about like they were terrible for like a while. It's just if you stick with it for like a certain amount of time, you will get better. And if you don't get better, then maybe you shouldn't do it. But if you like are actively like writing and trying to improve, learning from people around you, and like you see improvement, then that's kind of makes you feel better. And so then that's kind of what happens is like you start, you're pretty bad. Then you just like notice improvement over time. You record your sets and you hear more laughs each time. And so you're like, okay, I'm getting better type of thing.
Watch the tapes, basically.
Exactly. Kind of like with sports, because I was an athlete. And, you know, you'd play a game, you'd watch game tape, see what you did good, what you did bad. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like the mindset I had with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of, is just like listening to professionals, hearing about their early days as a way to, like, keep the motivation up, tracking improvement. And I guess, how did I write my first sets? Honestly, in the beginning, I was just telling stories. I started off as a different comic than I am now. Like, I told a lot of stories from, like, my life and stuff, as opposed to, like, straight-up jokes that I do now.
Right.
But, yeah, it's like trial and error, honestly.
100%. I saw that you, for a while, were a writer for the Huffington Post. I'd love to hear how you found yourself there, and then also what you did for them.
This is an example of like faking it.
An important lesson.
Yeah, because I wrote articles that would be on the Huffington Post, but it was essentially like blogging.
Oh.
Honestly, everything I submitted would just go up. And I don't think they even checked that much, like what I was writing about. But this is like, I met somebody through stand-up who liked me. And they're like, hey, I have access to the Huffington Post through this website where you can post stuff and it'll have your name on it.
Wow.
And that's the thing is, there, I forget the quote, like who it's from. It might be from Malcolm X, but it's a quote that like, in order to get something, you got to make it seem like you got something. And so I'm like, all right. If I can get this and make it look like I'm like a real like writer for the Huffington Post, people give me more opportunities, which they 100% did. And I'm not really lying because my stuff is on the Huffington Post.
Yeah.
It's honestly like I just met somebody who gave me an email address that I could use so I could post stuff to the Huffington Post. Yeah, that's how. And then from that, I had people from other websites like, we see you write for the Huffington Post. Do you want to write for our website? I'm like, yes, I would.
Sure. With juggling multiple jobs and having a more freelance or non-traditional career, how do you stay motivated and how do you measure your progress?
Staying motivated is honestly, as I find it pretty difficult. I don't have the highest like esteem as a guy. So I'm lucky to have like a really good support network of people where I'm just like, I suck. I'm never going to get better. So just having like a good social network so you can have reasonable mental health in a field that's borderline designed to make you feel insane is very good.
Yeah.
And honestly, journaling is very useful. Like sometimes I'll just check back to see what I was writing about back then. Like I'll try to like set a goal every year about what I'm trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the times I realize, even though I'm feeling pretty down about something at times, that I've actually accomplished a decent amount of them.
Yeah.
In comedy, it's a little easier because you can just see the quality of jokes that you're writing. And that's also what helps me. Like, I'll look back like a year ago to what I was writing and I'll cringe, and that's good because
it means you've improved.
Exactly. So that's what I would say, is just like having a good social support network, writing down what goals are, and then just looking back at what you wanted to accomplish.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm a very like video game type mentality with stuff. I guess gamification is kind of a way to think about it.
Yeah.
I'll be like, okay, I did this number of shows last week, and I've done this number of shows this week. So, you know, I'm kind of leveled up in that respect. So,
and I definitely felt that when I was performing, you know, because you set your own levels too. So you have to decide when you've leveled up, for example. I want to turn our attention back to The Daily Show. I know from your intro that you said you got this job via LinkedIn, which is amazing. And also you should do ads for LinkedIn because they need more of that.
I've been trying.
But I'd love to hear sort of the play-by-play of getting started there at The Daily Show. Is that something you had always thought of as a goal, or was it just a happy accident? And what your first few months were like there as a researcher?
Yeah, it was something I didn't even think it was possible. It literally just was not on my radar at all.
Yeah.
I was kind of in the mindset, I will take whatever I can get, any type of job in entertainment, I'll do it. I don't care like what the show is. If I hate it, I'll just do it.
Yeah.
So when I got it for The Daily Show, I was like, oh, this is great. Because like, I watched the show when I was in high school, you know, so it had like a special place for me.
Totally.
You know, when I originally got there, I was just like, okay, I'm not fired. That's my main concern, is like, just don't lose this job.
Uh-huh.
But honestly, the people who work there are very nice. And I'm saying this, you know, Trev doesn't have a gun to my head. I was surprised like how just like nice and supportive the people were.
Yeah.
I remember Roy Wood Jr. did this workshop with people at the show, and he was like giving out advice. So a lot of it was just like dealing with insecurity and fear on the early few days. And then, you know, after you start to get some segments on the show, then that's when, you know, the fear kind of subsides. You're like, okay, I've produced something that is like on television.
Yeah.
Worthy of being on the show. And that kind of like just boosts your confidence.
Totally.
So yeah, so that was kind of like the early part of it, was just, you know, dealing with being terrified at every single moment.
Hard to be funny when you're terrified too.
It really is. So yeah, as you learn to put that away. And it's very different from performing because, you know, performing, if you do bad, you can just be like, all right, well, I'll never see this crowd again. But these are your coworkers. You're like, I have to see you every single day.
Right. Yeah. What is a typical day like at The Daily Show? Like you come into the office and you what?
Pre-quarantine, yeah, you'd get in at like 9:30. And then there is this morning meeting every day. Where you just like watch all the news footage that potentially going to be used that day. And you like make jokes, you riff on stuff, share your ideas about what you think, what you think about each of the stories. And then from there, Trevor and the head writers will go and decide which stories they want to use. If anyone's made any jokes that particularly they liked in the morning meeting, that might guide their decision on which stories to choose. Mm-hmm. And then once they choose the stories, they send out these things called gangs, which is like they have the news clipping that you're responding to. And then they'll either have a prompt of the angle they want you to take on the jokes responding to that news clip, or it'll just be complete free for all. And you just kind of throw your jokes in and you just throw in as many as you can.
Cool.
Oh, it's been so long, so I like forgot this is what we used to do because this is not how it is anymore. But usually there would be a there's a first act and a second act, and then two writers would be assigned to the first act and two writers would be assigned to the second act.
Gotcha.
You'd just be you and that one other writer writing the script. Mm-hmm. And then you could like throw out help on jokes to the rest of the writers, which is like what the gangs are that I was talking about.
Gotcha.
And so once all the scripts are done, then we go to rehearsal. And then Trevor does a run through of the acts, no audience. And we see basically like what feels good for him to say, if the crew is laughing at the jokes or not, which actually is a big guide to how we write.
I bet.
Yeah, if the crew's like just absolutely nothing, we're like, oh, maybe this isn't the best joke.
They're the hardest audience, I bet.
Yeah, they see it every single day. And yeah, and then after rehearsal's done, then you go to rewrite, which is literally just you, the other writer, Trevor, and the producer of the segment. And then you just whittle it down and you literally put on a clock until showtime because like the show has to start.
Wow.
So yeah, you're just sitting in that room trying to get the jokes better. And then once the clout down hits zero, boom, you got to get out because they got to produce the show.
That's wild.
Yeah, that's kind of the fun part is like, all right, no matter what, a show's being made. So like sometimes you'll think of like the perfect addition to the joke the next day. I'm like, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Show's over. Time for the next one.
I was going to say a good lesson in perfectionism. Like I know one of my things that I really needed to work on as an artist and as a creative person was just knowing when to be done and like hit publish effectively.
Oh, yeah.
And I bet having to produce something daily, you know, is really difficult, but also really good for like squashing perfectionist instincts.
Oh, 100. Yeah, because I was the same way. I'm just like, okay, this could always be better. This could always be better. Which, I mean, it can. But at a certain point, like the margins of return are pretty low where it's like, you might as well just get this out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Zooming out a little bit, what's a common misconception about comedy writing that you wish to correct or you want people to know?
Some people like expect everything to be real, like you're doing a diary, which no, it's entertainment.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know what? Something else that bothers me or I prefer people know is like people always often describe like comedy. It's like, oh, what do? Comedy. It's like, okay. And they kind of like lump comedians together in this way that I think is not very useful because, you know, there's so many different types of comedy. You should have like a wider view on what comedy is. Like when someone says, you know, they're a musician, you don't just go, oh, cool. They make music.
Right.
But you're like, okay, what genre?
What's your instrument?
And so like comedy does break down in that way as well. There's like a lot of different genres and styles and stuff like that. Like people have kind of just a small expectation of what comedy is based on like the three or four comics they actually know. Mm-hmm. I wish there was like a wider view of comedy as compared to other styles of, I feel weird calling it comedy art, but art, yeah.
No, it is. What would you say is your comedy instrument?
God damn it.
You knew I was going to ask
Do I know? I'm tend to be like a bit more traditional, I guess. I'm like a pretty like standard setup punchline type of guy.
Yeah.
let's say chill wave.
Chill wave comedy.
I feel like I like chill wave comedy, yeah.
I love that. Because, you know, I do like pretty general titles. I mean, maybe you didn't know. I do pretty generalized industry titles as a part of the, you know, titles for this podcast. So now it's going to be Chill Wave Comedy with Randall Otis.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I generally have like pretty chill energy on stage, except when I like scream every once in a while. So, yeah, Chill Wave Comedy with a pop of whatever.
Nice. Okay. With that in mind, what is it that keeps you coming back to comedy every single day? Like, what draws you to it?
It's the only thing I can do. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, it makes me feel good. Like, when you write like a really good joke that encapsulates like a thought really well or how you feel, it just feels good.
Yeah.
That's it. It's like a pretty hedonistic reason. It's like, it feels good to laugh and it feels good to write jokes.
Yeah.
It's not especially deep.
But also that, I think that is a very authentic answer. I haven't had as much in common with everyone that I interview in that I haven't experienced even close to the industry that they might have worked in or work in. And I agree with you. Like, it feels good to have people enjoy what you are performing and like clap and laugh. It does. So I appreciate your honesty.
And change the world with comedy. Speaking truth to power. Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like, so, not to ask the dreaded question, but do you have any hopes or goals about where your career in chillwave comedy goes from here?
Yeah, I've recently been doing more like of my own, because like I feel like I spent so much time early on in that mindset of like, don't get fired.
Yeah.
That I was more working with scared money type of thing and just like kind of putting all my energy into the day show, which I've still been putting a lot of energy into it.
Yeah.
But I have like projects with some other comedians that I'm excited about, doing some like narrative stuff. So basically just like getting to work in different fields of comedy and like genres of comedy that I haven't been working in the past few years is kind of exciting.
That is really exciting.
I don't know. My goal, it's never like anything specific. I really just like working with people that I respect.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the best part. So if I can like just keep doing projects with people whose, you know, sensibilities I like and whose sensibilities jive with me, then I'm always pretty happy, no matter really what it is.
Yeah. Who is your favorite comedian right now or one that you would love to work with?
I really like Jerrod Carmichael. He's like one of my favorite comics. Rami, I think, is really great as well. Chelsea Peretti is a perennial favorite. And honestly, I get to work with some of my favorite comics. Like Jabuki is one of my favorite comics. Roy Wood Jr. is one of my favorite comics.
That's so cool that you get to work with him. That's,
yeah.
Many people can't say that. So that is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay. So we're coming to the end of our time, but I ask everyone the same question at the end as sort of like a control question. Do you think that people should be passionate about what they do for a living?
I think it's good to be, but it's not necessary. You can get like obsessed with careerism, but I just think like the minimum to me is like you should be able to get to work in a place that gives you like basic respect, pays you well enough that you can enjoy your life and then like pursue what you want to pursue. So, I don't know. Some people don't like have like huge passions or their passions aren't like super monetizable. You know what I mean?
Right. I agree.
So I don't think you have to do what you love for a career, but I think your job should give you the amount of time, money, and like, well, you know, just basic
resources.
Resources, that's a word. So you can do it in your off time.
I agree. And I remember when I was thinking about starting this podcast, I very specifically didn't want to make it a career podcast because career, I feel like, is a loaded word. And I'm so glad you said careerism because I feel like it's an American disease, like that your job is your life. Like you meet someone, you say, hey, what's your name? What do you do? And like, what do you do could be so many other things besides what you do to make money. And so this podcast is exploring what people do for work to make money. But I didn't want it to be like, what do you do with your life, aka your job, aka your career, because you can do so many more things with your life than what you do for a living. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, because I know this one guy who just like really likes being a dad. I'm like, well, that could never be me, but good for you, man. And
right. And that's, you don't make money being a dad. The last time I checked. Anyway, that's all I got. Thank you so much, Randall, for coming on or taking this time. I seriously appreciate it. You are a great way to end the season. So thanks for being so honest about your, for lack of a better word, career for your job.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks again to Randall for chatting today. And thanks to all of you. Seriously, if this is your first time listening to Line of Work or you've been listening all season, I am so, so happy that you're here. I hope you found something you heard helpful or just entertaining or illuminating for your own line of work in some way. I really had a blast making this. Happy holidays and safe holidays, and I'll talk to you all soon.